Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio here at WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, with my lovely co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, and my wife, helping to keep me on track and focused as we return to what we do on Fridays, which is cover how music changed.
That's right.
Where we try to cover 250 of the most important people in the history of popular music. Today, we are going to begin what is actually episode number 10, our 10th, which is to say we're back in the early days, quite obviously,
right,
of the history of music. And episode 10 is going to be dedicated mostly to the Empress of the Blues, Miss Bessie Smith. We had just heard Bessie actually opening up our show with her version of Beale Street Mama from a very early recording from the early part of her career.
Is she from Memphis?
Bessie, actually, we'll get into her history in a little bit because
I'm jumping the gun.
That's all right. The reason I don't want to start right away with Bessie is because first I'd like to mention and recall what we've done actually to get to this point. You'll probably remember in our previous 9 shows, we've covered pretty much the birth of the recording industry, how America began to develop its own identity in music and how that branched out to America's own style of popular music, how eventually that led, how blues music was developed. We did an extensive study on how blues pretty much just came up over
from field hollers and things of that nature.
Exactly, et cetera, et cetera, until it began to become an influential style on pretty much everything, including pop music and the other type of music that was just beginning to develop, which was jazz, hot jazz. And we did a number of shows on that as well. And we even covered some of the early New Orleans bands that were playing hot jazz.
That's right.
And then, of course, we covered a couple of individual people. We took a look at Sidney Bechet.
Yes, and Sidney Armstrong. I mean, Louis Armstrong was there.
We didn't do Louis Armstrong yet. But,
no, we haven't.
Nope. We will be doing him soon enough. But my point is that I wanted to, since we covered all these other people and we were talking how blues was beginning to influence these other styles, what really is the most interesting is that as the recording industry was developing, is that the blues began to become a bit of an influence on culture in and of itself. Now, it's really probably no big surprise to say that white audiences were not paying attention to the blues much at all at this early stage. And in fact, it was pretty much a given that even the black audiences had really no use for the blues as far as any sort of commerciality. But by 1920, that began to change pretty drastically when the first blues record was issued. Now, Bessie started recording after that. And so even Ma Rainey began recording after that. But our story today is actually going to begin with Ma Rainey, who really was, she might not have been the first blues singer to record or the first blues singer to make records, but she probably should have been. Back, she was one of the people who was actually picking up on the way that blues had developed as we covered it in our previous shows and began to sing it professionally by the turn of the century. She began singing professionally when she was a teenager. She was singing on medicine shows when there still was such a thing as medicine shows and minstrel shows. In 1904, she married a man named William Rainey. And, of course, she took that as her own name. Her birth name, by the way, was Gertrude Pridgett. But after she married William Pa Rainey, she decided to call herself Gertrude Ma Rainey. And naturally, she performed with her husband at various stops on these tours and these medicine shows and minstrel shows and circuses, tent shows, all the type of things wherever she could get work as a black woman touring through mostly the southern United States. It's interesting also what she called herself as a couple with her husband. They were known as Rainey and Rainey, Assassinators of the Blues. That's really cool.
That's really funny.
That was their name. And yet, the thing is about, you know, with her working at this stuff and becoming quite popular with her audience, it was never really considered wise to record anybody singing the blues because at this point, this early in music's history, it wasn't considered artful. And keep in mind now, this is an age before even microphones existed. And you might be asking, well, how could you possibly have a recording if there was no such things as microphones? And this pretty much goes back to what, as we covered it in early shows, these recordings were made pretty much
on
to the way that
cones,
right,
the coils.
The way that Edison was originally doing it, where you literally would sing into this gigantic thing that looked like an ice cream cone, this just a big, gigantic.
Yeah, old fashioned phonograph.
Exactly.
With a big cornucopia looking horn thing.
And there was no way to really play with the sound except to either stand close or stand far away. And if your musicianship was in any way compromised, it was immediately apparent. There was no way to doctor it. So if your singing wasn't perfect and if you didn't have a strong voice and if you didn't have a sense of pitch, it was going to be painfully obvious, even under those like primitive circumstances where the sounds weren't ideal. So you really had to have an exceptional amount of talent in order to even have something which would be considered sellable.
Right.
And the powers that be originally thought that this would best be used for things like bands, of course. And this is why we originally had a lot of recordings of John Philip Sousa,
stuff, yes.
A lot of instrumental stuff, and of course the operatic singers. And then eventually some popular singers, as we had covered in earlier shows as well.
Like Caruso?
Exactly. Now, since we're talking about Ma Rainey, though, and even though this song predates the first recording of the blues, and since she was the person who was singing this and the first one to popularize it, it might be nice to listen to a couple of Ma Rainey's recordings.
Good idea.
So let's hear something that she actually recorded, one of her earliest recordings from the year 1923. Here is Ma Rainey with Walkin' Blues. Walking Blues by what very well might be the earliest progenitor of recorded blues music. Not the first artist to be recorded singing the blues, but probably almost definitively the oldest of all the artists who were eventually recorded, since we can trace Ma Rainey's recording, actually her history at least, back to the turn of the century. Apparently she claims to, although she was born in 1886. She says that she was performing on the vaudeville circuit by 1900 and singing the blues by the time she had married her husband, Pa Rainey, in 1904. Her talent was so exceptional. I mean, it might be difficult to discern it now. I know that these recordings can be difficult to listen to because of the way that they were recorded acoustically without microphones. We're not used to hearing this sort of sound, which is fairly compressed in its range today any longer. So it takes a special ear to hear through it. But it needs, I think it's important to check it out, especially in terms of what the history brings, because this really is the birth of the blues. And if you can imagine thinking about forward to what recorded blues eventually did in the scope of how it influenced American music, I don't think you can get more influential than this, which is why people like, you know, Ma Rainey were so important, and eventually how she had an effect on Bessie Smith, who will certainly be the main focus of our attention for the next few weeks as we discuss the early blues.
Wow.
I should say shows, because we're definitely going to be covering Bessie for significantly longer than just today.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Now, the track we heard, Walking Blue, is one of my points with Ma Rainey is that her talent was good enough to have her be able to attract some of the best musicians of that era. And especially since there was, by the time she did start to record, like that track was recorded in 1923, there was a blues craze. Everybody was interested in the blues, and Ma Rainey was right there, ready to attract whoever was interested, and the best players came. For example, that track actually had Tommy Ladnier and Jimmy O'Brien on cornet and clarinet, and Lovie Austin playing piano, which is pretty awesome accompaniment for that time. It's about as good as it could get. This next track is actually something that you might recognize. This goes back to originally 1924 when it was recorded. It's actually partially credited to Ma Rainey. How many times have you heard a song called C.C. Rider?
Right.
In one shape or form or another. Well, here it is. Probably what has to be the very first recording of the song ever. And the band, just check this out. Louis Armstrong plays cornet in back of Ma Rainey. Fletcher Henderson is on this track playing piano. Buster Bailey on clarinet. And bands just don't get much better than that in 1924. It's fairly awesome. And to think that Ma Rainey is singing this song, and it's the very first version that you ever could have had to hear this song, which has probably been recorded since then hundreds, if not thousands of times. Ma Rainey's recording from October 16th, 1924, the C.C. Rider Blues.
I made up this
is a track that has lived on.
I'm doing jazz hands.
Yes, you are. That track's probably, well, it's been done in so many different times throughout history. It's actually been turned into a rock and roll song by a number of artists. It went from being like an R&B song. It broke into rock and roll. I think that there's even bands that are essentially heavy metal bands that have done their own versions of CC Rider.
As, yes.
It's pretty incredible when you think about it. All in this instance, this is all by Gertrude Ma Rainey.
So every time someone does it, they give her credit?
I'm not actually sure. Well, on her version...
Like, does Elvis have her credited on his CC Rider?
You know, they might actually say that it's a different song, but it really isn't. And I wonder if it very well might have said Ma Rainey or Rainey as one of the songwriters of the song. And it technically should have if the publishing...
Whoopsie.
Excuse me. If the publishing was handled correctly and if the information about Bessie Smith taking songwriting credit is correct.
Bessie Smith.
I'm sorry, Ma Rainey. Excuse me. Thank you very much. See, that's why you're here. That's good. Yeah, because on the back of this right now, as I'm looking at it, you can see where the credits are. And CC Rider, it's credited to Rainey Arant. Huh. So there you go. Now, what eventually, by the early 20s, Ma Rainey had become a featured performer. And
so she was a draw.
Yeah, she was a very big draw and becoming well known. And her records were selling really well. Her popularity lasted for only 6 years, from about 1923, really till the end of the 20s. By then, the blues craze had faded, pretty much completely vanished from the popular scene. And a lot of these original blues singers had pretty much been put out to pasture, so to speak, in a sense. But when she was at her peak, she did record over 100 tracks. And it's rather interesting. While she was touring and attracting everybody in her prime, the association or the circuit that she was traveling on was known as the Theater Owners Booking Association. What the Theater Owners Booking Association was essentially a booking agency that would bring together various black acts, all which had different. You could have comedy, you could have dance troupes, of course, and singers, naturally, all touring together to attract a crowd at the various theaters. Remember also, this was also before movies were in these theaters.
It's like a vaudeville type thing.
Very much so.
You have a lot of different... performers getting together and putting on one big show.
Exactly. And the theaters were essentially theirs until the movies did begin to intervene. And a lot of the theater owners found that it was a lot less expensive just to show a movie and you attract a huge crowd than it was to have these groups come in. But what eventually would happen is there'd be a transition period where you might have this group with a theater, with this TOBA organization, playing a show in the afternoon, then showing a movie, then playing another show in the evening, followed by the movie again. And the schedules that they gave these people were absolutely incredible.
Rigorous.
Oh, that was absolutely. TOBA, as I said, technically may have stood for, you know, Theater Owners. Where'd it go again? I can't even find that. Theater Owners Booking Association, but it was known among the players as Tough on Black Asses. That's what they called the TOBA, because they said it was just absolutely unbearable, the schedule that they had. But Ma Rainey was the original star of this organization. And this next track is yet another reason why, another song that has now gone on to live forever in hundreds of versions since then. A lot of them recorded early, and again, another song that's been covered by so many people. You could follow this track right on up to a band like The Clash, which did their own variation on this same song on the album London Calling. I mean, that's just a reach, but it's nevertheless, it's true. Here's Ma Rainey with her version of the Stacker Lee Blues.
Then you'll have the road.
Ma Rainey. That track actually dates back to December of 1925. It's credited to Ma Rainey, accompanied by her Georgia band. And listen to the players.
Okay.
Who were her Georgia band. On cornet, that was Joe Smith. Joe Smith is the man who pretty much replaced Louis Armstrong in a number of bands and actually was the number one accompanying trumpet player behind Bessie Smith for most of her recordings. Charlie Green was on trombone, Buster Bailey on clarinet, Coleman Hawkins on saxophone on that track, Fletcher Henderson again on piano with Charlie Dixon on banjo. Just pretty much a total all-star lineup behind Ma Rainey in 1925. Now, I played these tracks by Ma Rainey first because Ma Rainey technically came first, but I am playing them out of sequence with real time, which is something that I usually don't do. But I felt it was necessary to do it in this instance to try to tell the story of Ma Rainey setting up what was happening on the blues circuit up until this point. By 1920, though, that was the year that the first blues track was recorded, and it was essentially an accident. Keep in mind, of course, that the recording business was owned by corporations. Corporations were owned by white businessmen. White businessmen were interested in making recordings for people who they deemed would be wealthy enough to buy their product, which meant pretty much they thought that all recordings were meant to be aimed at a white audience. So they never really bothered at all with recording minorities or trying to find whether or not there even would be a demand among minorities for recordings. Something happened, though, in 1920. Apparently, there was a recording session that was meant to take place for a singer named Sophie Tucker, who we will also probably cover a little bit in our coverage of Bessie Smith in this series.
Okay.
But what happened in this one instance is Sophie Tucker, who was a pop song singer at the time, didn't make the session. There was a woman named Mamie Smith, who was not technically a blues singer, but who happened to be in town and very close to where this was supposed to take place. And since they needed somebody to fill up the session time, since Sophie Tucker was essentially a no-show, they brought Mamie Smith in to record a song. Well, Mamie Smith had a blues that she had learned called Crazy Blues. So naturally, the song was recorded. And it was not really considered to be necessarily worthwhile to even release the song. But because, again, keep
but
in mind.
But it was done.
It was done. I mean, the recording world was in its infancy. Well, what do we do with this? Well, let's pretty much put it out there and see what happens. Well, you want to know what happened? In the first 6 months of its availability, it sold over 1 million copies.
Wow.
It single-handedly gave birth to what eventually became known as race records. They called them that because, like I said, they didn't know what else to do. It was records that were made exclusively for minority audiences, for black audiences. But it proved one thing, that there was a huge demand for music from black audiences. And ultimately, as history has proven, pretty much most of the influential music from this era derives almost exclusively from songs that are now considered to be race recordings. So thank goodness this accident happened. And it's too bad it didn't happen sooner, but it does start in 1920 with Mamie Smith singing this track called Crazy Blues.
Feel so blue.
Is a song that literally, quite literally, gave birth to an entire industry. Blues music, the birth of, not the birth of blues music per se, but the birth of blues music as an industry, as a sensation for part of the recording industry. Mamie Smith singing her version of Crazy Blues. Now, of course, you've got to keep this in mind. Not only is it's a million-selling record, but the things that make it crazily unique, she's a black singer, she's a woman. It's singing a vocal blues, all brand new things to the world of popular music. Now, here's something that she also essentially, I can't say necessarily gave birth to, but I think it's fairly interesting that while the whole world is reacting to Mamie Smith and her recording of Crazy Blues, and since it sold so many copies, it was only natural that Mamie Smith would try to recreate her popularity. And I'm playing this song mostly out of curiosity, interest more than anything else, because I think it's rather funny how when an artist will have a popular hit of a certain type of a style or a certain subject, they might come back with another record which is very similar. Well, that was exactly what was expected of Mamie Smith. So you just sang a song called Crazy Blues. You better come back and, you know, we need something to have a million seller like that, Mamie. So here's the next track that Mamie Smith put out. Nowhere near as successful, unfortunately. This one entitled Going Crazy with the Blues.
My head is reeling. Oh, what a feeling. And something hurts my brain. Just like screaming, I'm like a demon. I fear I'll go insane. If you knew what I've gone through, you would feel the same way too. I'm going crazy with the blues since I have heard heartbreaking news. My honeyman's gone, thrown me down. Now he's spreading place in town, and now he's holding out on me. He will not see me privately when I think of all I did to make him glad. Gave him absolutely everything I had. It's about enough to drive a woman mad. Going crazy with the blues for me. Going crazy with. Thank you.
That's a little bit further into Mamie Smith's career, her follow-up to Crazy Blues called Going Crazy with the Blues.
It sounded like a hit to me.
Yeah, it's a great song. It's a great old song. But nowhere near the impact of her first recording, of course. Well, Crazy Blues, you can only be first once.
True.
And that's what happened in the case of Mamie Smith. Now, don't think that people weren't paying attention, because it was that recording that, of course, now set a whole series of events into motion. We have all of these people now who are trying to make records, suddenly realizing that there's an entire market untapped.
They're racing to make race records.
Exactly. So we've got to find, we've got to tap this audience. Obviously, blacks like the blues. We've got to find other people who can do this and record them and sell their records. And of course, since Mamie Smith was a woman, they started looking for other women, which is exactly what brought Ma Rainey to their attention and why she started her recording career in 1923. And that is eventually the exact same thing that eventually brought Bessie Smith into a recording studio for the exact same reason. Because the craze began in about 19...
You're making it make sense for me.
Took a couple of years, and all of a sudden, this is what everybody was looking for. One woman who benefited from this incredibly was a singer-songwriter named Alberta Hunter. Now, Alberta Hunter, actually, her career lasted an incredibly long time, right into the 80s. She had her recording career continued. She died in 1984.
Wow.
And some people probably know her best from her recordings from the late 70s, early 80s. She had a wonderful album put out then, which is probably still available, called Amtrak Blues, of her singing with, like, she's got this old scratchy voice, and but she's, you know, she had a lot of sass and spunk about her, and she just sounded great. People who knew her from those recordings, though, would be shocked to know that the same woman was also one of those people who were picked up in the early 20s and was recording records back in 24, 25, thereabouts. In fact, on an earlier show, you might recall, I believe when we were covering Sidney Bechet, we played a recording by a band called the Red Onion Jazz Babies.
Uh-huh.
We played it a number of times. I think we played this track. We played Cakewalking Babies from Home.
Yeah.
Which, excuse me, had Sidney Bechet and Louis Armstrong playing side by side.
Right.
The vocalist on that track happened to be Alberta Hunter.
Oh.
Just to put that in perspective. She got her start pretty much in Chicago, working as a teenager. And she was really good friends with Louis Armstrong's wife, Lil Hardin Armstrong, working in Chicago. Mm. And they were playing clubs there, and Chicago was a rough town. And in fact, she decided it was time to leave Chicago when, doing one show, her piano accompanist was actually shot in the head by a stray bullet.
Oh, my God.
And died during the performance. She was like, you know what, I'm leaving
rough
Chicago.
Crowd.
That's, yeah, this is a rough town. Time to move on. So she leaves Chicago, comes to New York, where she starts to make her initial records in 1921. These recordings are eventually what gets heard by Bessie Smith. But there's one track I want to play, an early recording of Alberta Hunter playing with none other than Fats Waller. And I want to play this, her version with Fats Waller of Beale Street Blues, because this sounds so old that to me, this is one of the most haunting recordings I can imagine hearing. This is Fats Waller playing an organ, and you can imagine, of course, well, you should hear it. This it's just a beautiful, haunting recording by Alberta Hunter. And as I said, Fats Waller, here's their version of Beale Street Blues.
I'd rather be there than any place I know. I'd rather be there than any place I know. It's gonna take that surgeon all to make me go. I'm going down to the river, maybe by and by. I'm going down to the river, and here's my reason why. 'Cause that river's wet, Beale Street done gone dry.
It's one of the most haunting versions of Beale Street Blues I think you'll ever hear. Of course, Fats Waller playing the organ and Alberta Hunter, a rather sweet-voiced Alberta Hunter singing that. And as I said, people who know her from her latter work would hardly even recognize her there. It's worth mentioning that she dropped out of show business for almost 20 years. In the year 1956, she really couldn't get much work as a blues singer at that point. She ended up working as a nurse in New York City area. And she had this job for 20 years, and the people, like essentially working as an orderly in a hospital and as a nurse, and people had no idea who she was. And after 20 years, she decided to come out of retirement, became instantly famous again. These people who knew her for 20 years were like, what? She's who? Absolutely. I blew everybody's mind. It's worth mentioning that one of the most interesting things about Alberta Hunter's career is that she was also a songwriter. And she had written one song that actually became very important to Bessie Smith. It actually is a song that became Bessie Smith's very first recording and her very first hit single. Huh. Of course, it was a song that was written and recorded by Alberta Hunter as well. So let's hear Alberta Hunter's version of Downhearted Blues.
I'm in my head.
right there it is, Alberta Hunter's version of Gulf Coast Blues. Now, we wouldn't have much time for me to get into the whole backstory of Bessie today, Bessie Smith's story.
How did I guess that was going to happen?
So we will cover the backstory next week as we begin to pick up pretty much on a show which will probably be dedicated almost exclusively to Bessie next week. But I don't want to talk too much between the two versions because I want you to hear them back to back. So putting the story aside, let it just be said that on February 15th, 1923, Bessie Smith did enter the studio to record her own version of that same track entitled Gulf Coast Blues. It became her first hit single. So here is that song, same song as recorded by Bessie Smith. A bit of a correction to make there. I apologize for the confusion there. But after the Alberta Hunter's song, Downhearted Blues, I intended to play the other side of this 78 RPM record. But what it actually was, Bessie's first single consisted of Alberta Hunter's Downhearted Blues on one side with Gulf Coast Blues on the other. And we had just heard what was essentially the A side, Gulf Coast Blues, with Downhearted Blues being the B side of that recording. So we can play that as our last track for today, which is just essentially a reversal of what I intended to do anyway. So that's fine. The song we just heard, Gulf Coast Blues, is the track that pretty much began to put Bessie on the map as a significant presence. Nobody knew how far she would eventually go, which is to say she pretty much went as far as any female blues singer ever has. And in her time or any time, essentially. But that was the track that kicked it off. But we'll end our show with Bessie singing her version of that same track that we heard earlier by Alberta Hunter, her version of Downhearted Blues. And I'd like to hope that you can join us all next week as we continue looking at in depth at the career of Bessie Smith as we continue part 10 in our series of How Music Changed here on Fridays with American Hit Radio. So we'll see you next Friday at 5. Thank you very much for listening. Heidi, thank you so much for your input.
I kept quiet.
Oh, you kept me on track, as always. And we'll see you next Friday at 5. Thanks again. You've been listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. Take care, everybody.